Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Today on the Illini Inquirer podcast, let's get you ready for the Big Ten football opener for Illinois football. 1-0 coming off a week zero win over Wyoming. The Illini, for the first time since 2013, are heading east to Bloomington, Indiana for a Big Ten Friday night, 7 p.m. Central Time kickoff against the Indiana Hoosiers. Indiana coming off a very disappointing season. The previous 2 years, Indiana had been fantastic. Looked like one of the rising teams in the Big Ten, going 14-7 overall and 11-5 in the Big Ten from 2019 to 2020, including trips to the Gator Bowl, the Outback Bowl. They entered last season as a top 25 team, and then the bottom dropped out. Indiana goes 2-10 overall, 0-9 in the Big Ten, and they are again picked to finish last in the Big Ten East. So a big opportunity for Illinois, that knows a little bit about itself after a week zero game, to maybe get a win over a team that it should at this point, but it is a road game. Illinois is the underdog going into this one because Indiana is expected to be better than it was last year. Kind of have to be at this point. But this podcast, we get you ready for everything you need to know. Dustin Dupirak from the Bloomington Herald Times and Indianapolis Star covers Indiana, and he gives us as in-depth of a breakdown as you can think of for the Hoosiers. And then I bring in Joey Wagner to give us the Illini side of things, and we talk about everything about this matchup, what we learned from week one, everything you need to know before Friday's 7 p.m. kickoff. So enjoy it, sit back, relax, and enjoy the insight from both Joey Wagner and Dustin Dupirak. Let's get to know more about these Indiana Hoosiers from Dustin Dupirak next on the Illini Inquirer podcast.
Let's go!
It's the most all-star studded challenge ever. And this time, it's every competitor for themselves.
Best challenge ever!
The Challenge All-Stars. New season now streaming on Paramount+. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it free. Terms apply.
CBS Wednesday.
We have so many cool, diverse people from different backgrounds, different beliefs, different upbringings, and it just keeps growing.
I'm a citizen of the United States.
I'm a hustler.
I'm a big Taylor Swift fan.
I'm the queen of the tribe.
I'm a survivor.
I am playing whatever role I gotta play.
I'm gonna play this game full speed.
I ain't going down like no punk.
A new Survivor Wednesday on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.
Happy to talk Indiana with this guy. Haven't talked Indiana football against Illinois in a while. Dustin Dupirak, he's a long time covered Indiana athletics. He is the beat writer for the Bloomington Herald Times and the Indianapolis Star. It's been almost 9 years since Illinois football has gone over to Indiana. What's happened since then, Dustin?
I mean, I was only there for part of it, but a lot. I mean, a lot has happened, just a lot of rise and fall just in the recent years. Obviously going from 8-5 in 2019 and going to the Gator Bowl and almost winning it. 2020 in the crazy pandemic year, going 6-1 in the league before they lost in the Outback Bowl. And then last year just falling off the face of the earth and going 2-10. So a lot, and yet it's still you look back and say this, I don't know what to expect from this Indiana team. You can't look at it and say, well, this is definitely going to be a top five team in the league. Really, a whole bunch of outcomes seem possible for this group as far as high and low end, because you're just trying to figure out, okay, what is this Indiana program? Is it closer to what it was in 2019 and 2020, or is it really just what it was last year? And we're only going to begin to find that out tomorrow night or Friday night.
I think anybody rational would say, hey, that was the worst case scenario last year, right? And, sure. And that they're probably a better program than that, given what Tom Allen's done, even his first couple of years, right? Getting five wins isn't something to laugh at Indiana. It's kind of like Illinois. It's a tough job. So what did happen last year, Dustin? Like, how did it go so bad?
So much. I mean, I think, you know, injuries were obviously the big obvious point to it that you can look at it in circle and say, okay, well, you know, you lose Michael Penix against Penn State. He never seemed right in the first place, right. Just coming off the ACL the previous year. He seemed physically okay, but just didn't seem sharp at any point. And then he injures his shoulder and he's out. And then Jack Tuttle plays a couple games and he wasn't playing particularly well, but he throws a touchdown pass against Ohio State and he's out. So then you're throwing in Donovan McCauley, who's a really, you know, terrific athlete, but true freshman who hadn't been there in the spring because he wanted to stick around and play on a basketball team that went to the state finals. So you're digging deep by, you know, late October into your third string quarterback, who again is a true freshman with zero experience. And you saw injuries on the other side. I mean, basically you ended up, once they got past their starting running back, they were dealing with walk-ons there. You know, they had some wide receivers dinged up. But, you know, more, I think a bigger issue was defense, especially in the secondary. Really saw a lot of guys get hurt. Tywan Mullen was a preseason All-American, was All-American in 2020. And I think he played three games before he was injured. Devon Matthews gets hurt, you know, first game of the season, and he was out for a little while. And they really ended up just digging into that depth back there and never just really got right, especially in the secondary, which was really supposed to be a strength of theirs, a place where they'd been really, really good the year before. They had three guys who were all Big Ten. But there was more. You know, I think there was just the they did not handle expectations well. I think one thing that was really good about the 2020 team, I know, I think Mitchell Page, a former wide receiver, pointed this out to Zach Osterman in a story he wrote that year. He said, you know, basically when I was at IU, you know, it really bothered us who was in the stands. He said, these guys don't care. Like, they'll play you in the parking lot. Like, that's their deal. Like, they, and that's how they were able to really just continue to get jacked up in 2020 when there was nobody in the stands. And this group seemed to, you know, in 2021, they seemed to just get too into the idea that they were preseason top 25. They were supposed to do things Indiana teams had never done before. And there were guys who were thinking about the NFL and guys who would come back just for the purpose of building their NFL resume. And when things started to go sideways, they started to think about that, you know, instead of thinking about, you know, trying to get things right or trying to just win a couple games or just trying to find some level of success. It was like, okay, well, I'm just going to keep myself from getting hurt. I think the guys called themselves out for that, each other out for that. Some of the returners, but you know, even some guys that left who said, you know, yeah, they literally went into Tom Allen's office and said basically we just didn't feel like there was enough accountability. You know, we're not sure what you saw and what you didn't see, but this is what we saw. You know, we saw guys checking out, basically. And so I think there was just a lot that snowballed. I mean, again, they go down 14-0 in the first minute and a half, 2 minutes against Iowa. And it was like, okay, all of a sudden everything was already kind of crashing down. And I think that they just really never recovered. So a lot went on that was uncontrollable, that was injury, but some also was guys failing to meet the standard. What is a very high standard that they had set? I mean, this was really one of the feel-good programs in college football going into last year. But it just seemed like when things went south, there were a lot of guys that did not answer the bell.
Yeah. Well, Tom Allen makes some changes right after that. We'll get into Walt Bell and Tom Allen kind of taking back over the defense, which he's been pretty good at. But let's address the quarterback in this opener. They've had a quarterback competition. Illinois did. Here at Illinois, it's pretty clear Tommy DeVito was always going to be the starting quarterback. On paper, I would think Connor Bazelak, given his history at Missouri, given that Jack Tuttle, when he's played, hasn't had great numbers. But it seems like most people around there, at least some people I talked to, they don't know, even though Tom Allen and the rest of the team know. So what's your read on the quarterback situation?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's tough. It's tougher than I expected it to be. And I think that there is a lot of logic. I mean, I think if you're looking at it from outside, if you're, you know, like a fan of any other program, and you're like, okay, well, who do you think is going to play quarterback at Indiana? Well, one guy that's thrown for 5,000 yards in his career, the other guy's thrown for 800. So I think would be the guy that threw for 5,000. That right. seems like an obvious move to make. But I mean, you know, Tuttle has done some things that I think matter to Tom Allen that have kept him in this position. I don't know that he won it. I mean, because it is done. You know, at least I believe Tom Allen when he says that it's done, that he made the decision last week after the second scrimmage and after giving those guys basically, you know, pretty equal snaps over the course of two full scrimmages, felt like he had enough data to make the decision, wanted to have two full weeks of practice in which everybody knew who the guy was. So I believe him when he says the decision has been made, and they've just done a good job of not leaking it. You know, they haven't told us, and nobody mm-hmm. else has leaked it. So I, you know, I still would lean that if you ask me, okay, Dustin, if you had to lay money down on it, who do you think is going to be the quarterback on Friday? I would still say Bazelak, but the fact that I'm not sure tells you that Tuttle's done some things well, and among them really is leadership. I think, you know, as I mentioned, you know, basically a lot of the guys determined after last season that, man, it just can't happen again. This is all the issues that we have. You know, they had a meeting the next morning after they got housed 44-7 by Purdue, basically already on the bus. They were talking about like, okay, we got to talk with Coach Allen. So this is like Micah McFadden, Cam Jones, Jalen Williams, and some other veteran defensive guys. But Tuttle was a guy who decided, you know, basically like the first week of spring semester, you know, when they got back on campus in January, to develop a PowerPoint presentation, basically telling the rest of the guys, this is what the expectation is going to be. Like, this is what we're going to demand from you in terms of your presence. You need to be locked into this team, and we're not going to accept, you know, B-list effort on practice or anything like that. And this is what's going to be expected from you, you know, outside of practice. He called Cam Jones up and said, I want you to deliver this with me. And you know, that was, I think, something that mattered to Tom Allen. And he said there was three main criteria. One was going to be just knowing the offense, putting the offense together. Obviously that's both kind of on even footing with a new coordinator, with Walt Bell. But then said, I want a guy who's not going to turn the ball over. But I also want somebody who's going to command the respect of his teammates. I want the guy that these guys look at and say, he's going to make plays for us. He's going to move the ball for us. He's going to conduct this offense the way that it should be conducted. So I think Tuttle did a lot of things in that regard. On the flip side, I think Bazelak probably at the end of the day has, I don't want to say the physical tools, because like Tuttle's got an arm. I mean, you forget, like Tuttle was a 4-star recruit, elite 11 guy out of high school in California, went to Utah first. He's got a lot of the, you know, the raw stuff. But like Bazelak, one thing Allen really pointed out, and then when he says it and then you see it, you're like, I get it now. He says he throws a really catchable ball, which like it's one of the things that's like hard to quantify, but like their completion percentage, it's like 66 Bazelak to 55 Tuttle in their careers, in their playing careers. And Bazelak does like he kind of reminds you of like you know, the bigger kid on your block that you made go play all-time quarterback when you and your friends wanted to play on the street.
Yeah.
He reminds you of that kid, mm-hmm. you know, like the way he makes sure you can catch the football. He makes sure that, and that's important. It's just like getting the ball in the hands of playmakers and getting them going. He's got that kind of look to him because he's a bigger dude. He's like 6'3", 225, you know, just a touch huskier than Tuttle is. Tuttle made a point to lose some weight, but just seems to, you know, put it on the money where it's supposed to be to give you a chance to catch it and run with it. You know, it's not like you're not watching him doing crazy things with his arm, like, wow, how can anybody throw it that far? But just seems to put it where it's supposed to be to make it easy for the guy to catch and run. And I think that matters. So for that reason, I lean Bazelak, just because I kind of seen you know, we don't get to see a lot. They didn't let us watch a whole lot of 11 on 11. But that's the thing that stands out that makes me lean Bazelak. But I am not sure, because Tuttle has done enough to keep himself in this discussion and not have it be a runaway deal.
Yeah, just for Illinois fans, you know, both those guys, former 4-star prospects. So talent doesn't seem to be an issue there. All right, so Walt Bell comes in. He's got Big Ten experience in Maryland. You know, it's interesting because Ryan Walters, the DC at Illinois, knows Bazelak from Missouri. Andy Boo, the Illinois linebackers coach, was the DC when Walt Bell was the OC at Maryland. So both those guys know each other pretty well. But how does Walt Bell change this offense? What's it going to look like when they unveil it?
Yeah, I mean, I think a couple things that that you can derive that I can imagine will be an issue, and we've only seen so much of this so far, or not an issue, but a characteristic of a well-built offense. I mean, he's big on tempo because that's kind of how he was sort of coached up as a coach. Basically, his main mentor is Blake Anderson, who's the head coach at Utah State. Yep. Had been the head coach at Arkansas State when Walt Bell was there, and Anderson was his position coach, was Bell's position coach when Bell played as a slot wide receiver at Middle Tennessee State. So they like tempo, and Bell in particular likes to run the football. And obviously they're a spread offense. He's a guy that likes to go wide and fast, but does still like his guys, to be able to push it, to be able to run the ball a lot. His Arkansas State teams are probably his best statistical performances as an offensive coordinator was about 14-15, where I think they won the Sun Belt both years. Those teams ran the ball really, really well. And they had a quarterback that could really run it, Freddie Knight, and was a really talented kid there. But they had just sort of multiple running backs that they could get the ball and push it that way. But they're going to want to play fast, and that's, and that's going to be interesting to see if they can keep up tempo and get especially their linemen used to it, being able to get down, snap the ball fast when it's called for. They're going to use a lot of wide receivers. Bell says he wants to play 8 or 9 in a game. And they've got a lot. They feel really good about their guys. It's one of those interesting things where when you see them in practice, you're like, I can see it. And you might get on, in a game and say, those guys aren't nearly as impressive as you think. But they have a lot of guys they like there. They feel like they could trust. Cam Camper, they really like, a junior college kid. They're a huge fan of what they've seen from him. Really late blooming kid. He was barely recruited out of high school in Texas, but went to JUCO and grew like 6 inches after college, somewhere, or six inches after high school. I don't know. His high school coach said he was 5'9 when he played. Wow. And he's 6'2, 6'3 now. Wow. They like Donovan McCauley, who they moved to wide receiver. They like his talent a lot. They like the two slot guys that they have. DJ Matthews come back from an ACL tear, and Emery Simmons. But they really like some young guys as well. They really like Omar Cooper, who's going to be a true freshman. Malachi Holt Bennett, who's a true sophomore. They like what they've seen from Javon Swinton. They like a lot of those guys. So they're going to play a lot of tempo. And the running game hasn't been good for a while. I mean, even the 2020 team, they were good in picking up short yards with Stevie Scott, but they didn't run that well collectively. And so Walt Bell really, really wants to fix that. I mean, he believes in having a team that they can run the ball even when you know they're going to run it. So that's going to be the goal anyway, is going to be the point, is just try to get the running game right, play more tempo. He wants wide receivers also to play with creativity. That's one thing that they've kind of made a point of saying, is that he wants wide receivers to manage their grass. What that means is just knowing how to improvise around.
Yeah.
Basically, and that's kind of a thing that they've noticed, that they've been had more freedom to improvise on routes, to find where the opening actually is, as opposed to just running exactly where it's supposed to go. Basically have some have quarterbacks and receivers be able to communicate and know, okay, there's going to be opening there. You're supposed to run a slant, but maybe you turn that into a hook or whatever, or you shorten up the slant stop or something like that, so that you find what's actually there instead of just running you into defenders. So that, I think, is going to be interesting, what that actually looks like. It's never as drastic as how they talk about it. It sounds like it's just going to be a total free-for-all, and it's going to be like street ball, where you just right. The guy says hut, and you just run wherever you have to get shake the guy, that's defending you. It's not gonna be like that, obviously. But it's going to add another wrinkle to it. So those are, I think, kind of the key things in terms of what we've heard of what Walt Bell wants to do on offense. And so he might change that to account for what he thinks Tom Allen wants, because he really views it as, I'm not the head coach, the head coach of the offense. I'm Tom Allen's offensive coordinator, so it's my job to do what he wants. But I think those are some things that I think Allen wants this offense to do, because he obviously wants some drastic changes to what they did last year.
Yeah, you mentioned some of the playmakers there. I know they added a couple running back transfers, including Sean Shivers from Auburn. But I want to ask you about the trenches, because that's an area that Brett Bielema obviously prides himself on, is the trenches. And Illinois took big steps on the defensive line, and obviously had a good offensive line last year. So where's Indiana at with their guys in the offensive line and the defensive line?
Well, on offense, they are not a lot different in terms of their guys, and they didn't, to the dismay of many IU fans, they did not make a change there as far as coaching was concerned. There were many that were calling for that because they just did not feel like that group performed well, and frankly, it had less reason to underperform than a lot of other groups because they were mostly healthy. Comparatively, most of their, I think one of their starters missed more than one game. I think that's it. So they didn't perform particularly well considering that they had that benefit. They're talking as if they've improved, but it's a lot of the same guys. It's Luke Haggard at left tackle, Matthew Bedford, who's probably their most talented offensive lineman, has moved from guard out to tackle. So he'll be on the right side. The interior positions, they've not been necessarily declarative in terms of who's going to play, but I think it's going to be Zach Carpenter, the Michigan transfer at center, Mike Kadick at left guard, and they've talked a lot about Khalil Benson, so I think he's going to be the guy who's going to be at right guard, and that's the only real new name. They feel really good about him. He's a redshirt sophomore. So they say they're better. They say they're improving. They say their technique is better. They say that they're holding each other accountable, all these kinds of things. Is that true? I won't know until I see it, and I won't believe it until I see it necessarily. I mean, it is the same group of guys, and it's the one area where that they didn't really extensively address through the transfer market. It might be the only position group outside of maybe tight end that, and obviously that's a smaller group. You're only putting one guy out there most of the time. But I think at almost every other position group, they got somebody who was a Division I FBS and probably Power Five transfer. And they've got the one transfer they got on the offensive line is Division II guy named Parker Hanna from West Texas A&M, who they like, but I think is a second string guy, and I don't know if you'll see him make an impact on this year's team. So they're not going to be a drastically different group, so they just have to way outperform what they were. They just have to hope that last year's experience makes a difference. Well, a lot of guys are going to have had game experience. Haggard, Bedford, all have. Carpenter got a little last year, more at Michigan his previous year. Kata got a bunch last year. Benson's going to be a new guy, presuming he wins that job, and I think he did. But there's going to be a lot of experience, but it's not a ton of good experience, and it needs to be. They need to be able to create some holes and even protect their quarterback because they didn't do either one of those things last year. On the flip side of that, on the defensive side, they did address. They went out and got a lot more length. Got three really important transfers. I think J.H. Tevis was a defensive end, the Cal, and Patrick Lucas and Ladarius Cox, two transfers from Ole Miss, two really, really big guys from Ole Miss. They're going to add to that group, and they still have some guys coming back that they really like, DeMarcus Elliott, C.O. Nofogo Tataola, I think is his name. Samoan guy. I'm sure I butchered that. So, CEO, if you happen to come across this, I apologize.
We'll go with it.
But all the same, they've always felt good about those guys. Feel really good about what they've got up from James Head this year as a guy who didn't get to play much last year and wasn't really healthy when he did, but the year before he was pretty productive. They feel good about the depth they have at the three down spots. And they've also kind of turned, the weak side defensive end, and they call it the bull. It's a little bit of an outside linebacker defensive end hybrid, where that guy drops back as much as he pass rushes or close to it or whatever. They want a guy in a stand-up spot, and they feel really good about what they're getting there. They brought in a transfer, Miles Jackson, who they really like from UCLA. That didn't have great numbers there, but they really, really like him. But they also, Alfred Lance Bryan, who's their returning starter there. They feel great about how he developed. Basically, Jackson was on his heels just from the time he got in the door. And they said it's made Bryan a lot better. I mean, he trimmed up, got rid of some body fat, moving a lot faster, feels a lot better about what he's doing. So they feel like they've got two really good guys at that edge bull position. They think they are better. Now, it should be noted, I don't think any of those guys that I mentioned had a sack last year. I think all the defensive line sacks came from Ryder Anderson and Western Kramer, both of whom were guys who were one-year transfers coming in for their last year of eligibility last year. I think Ryder Anderson was just cut by the Giants the other day, and Kramer, I think, is in the Canadian Football League now. But two guys they really, really liked, and they're gone, so they obviously have to replace that production. And that's not going to be enough. They need more than what they had from those guys. So they have to step up, you know, get production on top of production, you know, just more from those guys than they've had. So they, you know, again, ultimately, I think they feel pretty good on the defensive line. But, you know, they haven't had proven production at Indiana from any of those guys. So some guys are going to have to step up and be playmakers more than they have been in recent seasons.
Yeah, Indiana certainly hit the transfer portal. 13 guys, I believe, and as you said, most of them Power 5 guys. So the back seven, I know last year maybe is the outlier, but they got good players. You mentioned Devin Matthews, Jalen Williams, Tywan Mullen, Cam Jones, returning linebacker, a captain. But I'm interested in your thoughts on Tom Allen kind of taking back control of the defense, right? Like, what do you think that means for the Indiana defense?
A couple big things, you know, and it was interesting that I was able to drag this out of him when I asked at the end of November, basically. You know, they really prided themselves on havoc through 2020, and I think they were and I just did this stat because I just wrote a story about it, but they were, I think, second in the country in interceptions in 2020, despite the fact that they only played 8 games, you know, and they were top 15 in sacks, you know, top 15 overall in turnovers caused, and then last year they were in the bottom 30 in all of those. Basically, they were 100 or worse in all of those categories. So that's drastic. And obviously, that tells you that there was a big difference in approach. And, you know, Carlton Warren was a defensive coordinator, but he was running Allen's system. You know, basically, all, like, he didn't run anything that Allen didn't have in there. It's just what he leaned toward. And I kind of asked him about that. You know, how do you explain just the just total drop-off? And this was obviously before he left, so this was like last November, and he said, you know, like, Indiana really played a lot of zone vision, almost all zone vision last year, and we did a lot more man concepts this year. And so I think Allen is going to run a lot more zone stuff, but I think more to the point, like, he's trying to get mentality in the guys to try to create more turnovers, but as far as he's concerned, it's being willing to get beat, give up some chunks here and there, but keep everybody's eyes on the football and have the possibility of a big play every time. Have the possibility of a tipped pass that somebody else can run and go get. You know, because, like, the one thing he mentioned was, you know, like, if you're in man and you're locked in, well, actually, Brandon Shelby mentioned this, the cornerback's coach. If you're locked in on your man, like, and the ball's tipped up in the air, you're not going to make a play on that. Right. You know, like, you're just going to follow your man out for the rest of the route, and that ball's going to fall on the ground, you know, and still it's a good play for the guy that knocked it down. But could be an interception. It could be a gain. It could be a situation where you either score yourself or set your, you know, team up for, you know, with a short field. And he wants more of that. You know, that's not to say they're never going to run man, you know, but, you know, especially, you know, and sure, the corners will more frequently, but they'll have, you know, safeties, you know, spending more time in some zones, linebacker more times in some zones, to put themselves in a position where they've got the ability to, you know, make a play on the football, like, watch what the quarterback's doing, and react and adjust and go break on the ball. And so I think that's what you're going to see more of. Now, that might lead to giving up some things in other ways. You know, that might give up, you might be giving up, you know, the kind of little chunk plays, 5-10 yard stuff that you do when you're in a zone, basically, that where if someone can figure out where the openings are, they can, you know, kind of, you know, nickel and dime you to death. But it's just believing in, you know, blitzing more from, you know, the husky spot, or blitzing more with safeties, or just bringing rushes from different parts, you know, of the defense, and keeping guys on their heels, and keeping defenses on their heels. And, you know, again, he's willing to roll the dice. He wants to go back to that, just more chance taking on defense. And he's also just, he says he's simplified it, is another thing that basically they piled up a lot of checks last year in the defense, and feels like maybe it slowed him down. That basically was asking for them to think too much. Not that they're not going to get the answer eventually, but while they're thinking, while they're coming up and say, okay, when he does this, I'm supposed to do that, it slows them down. You know, like, even if they eventually know what the right answer is, you know, like, it's slowing them down. They're not moving fast enough, and they're not just attacking. He wants them to be just, you know, violent, aggressive attack, just not have to think nearly as much as they did a season ago. So I think those were going to be the big areas. You know, he's done this. You know, he's taken the plays back, but he's not. He doesn't have the coordinator title. Like, he actually gave it up, gave someone else the coordinator title in Chad Wilt. And when I tell you, like, Chad is a Tom Allen clone, it's freaky. Like, it's like, I mean, like, he doesn't, you know, it's not as freaky as like Tom's son Thomas, who was just playing there. Like, Thomas looks like Tom. Like, you're like, oh my God, like, this, he is going to look just like the dad, you know. But like, Chad is like that same kind of like hyperactive, positive all the time, like, got all kind of, you know, like, sayings. He's literally like, I did a big feature on him. He's got like all these post-it notes like over top of his laptop, like on, you know, on a shelf overhanging, that are like, you know, just all these inspirational sayings written up. He's got quotes from, he's got a quote from Nipsey Hussle, but he's got all this other stuff in there that's very like, you know, I mean, it, but he's just into that stuff. Like, and he is the truest of true believers. He is not faking. Like, he is like, you know, power of positivity and leadership and all this stuff. I mean, it is not, you know, it's not cynical at all. Like, he really believes, and that's Tom Allen. Like, those, you know, like, there are, I think, a lot of guys who was like, if you just read Tom Allen's quotes, you'd be like, ah, okay, you know, he's one of these, you know, he's one of these guys. But like, Tom, like, the sincerity is very real in Tom Allen, and it is in Chad Wilt. And you're like, man, like, I get, like, they're going to get along wonderfully because they're basically the same guy. So, you know, like, that, Wilt is going to organize the defense. He's going to run the meetings. He's going to do a lot of the film watching, stuff like that. You know, Allen is not going to add to his hours that much, which is a thing, was reason why he stopped being coordinator in the first place, is that was taking away too much of his head coaching time. And he's made it so that Wilt can be the point man on a lot of things. But on game day, Allen's the guy who makes the call on, when it comes to plays. And that's just what he wanted back, just to get a little bit more power and control over it, so it was going the way he wants it to go. You know, I imagine there will come a time when Wilt gets that, when that's bequeathed to him, when but Allen, I think, just really feels like he needs to take control of this thing and get it right, because, you know, in his mind, his program is not going to be successful if his defense is not successful. He was hired because he was a great defensive coach. You know, he got promoted out of that job. And it's like, if the defense isn't right, then the whole program isn't going to be right. That's how Allen views it. So it's like, okay, I got, you know, if you want something right, do it yourself, sort of thing. And that's kind of where Allen is right now.
All right, Dustin, last one I got for you, and great insight as always in Indiana. This is obviously a huge game for both programs, right? I mean, these are two programs that, you know, I know Indiana's had their uptick here, but two programs still looking to kind of find their stability in the Big Ten and kind of rise up this rank, and a winnable game for both of them, but early in the season. Illinois has the advantage of getting maybe the rust out and having a game and evaluating itself, but Indiana also gets to evaluate Illinois while it's kept its stuff secret. What do you think of this matchup, and what does this game mean for the Hoosiers?
I mean, it's a very interesting matchup, just because, you know, it could literally go either way. And, you know, I mean, I think Illinois has got some sort of proven strengths that I'm waiting to see if Indiana can match and can deal with. I mean, you know, Chase Brown obviously was just terrific on Saturday against Wyoming. He's coming off a 1,000-yard season. You're like, okay, like, he could just flat run over them. You know, you're, it's, I mean, like, the way that he performed, you're like, okay, that is a guy that could really bust you up. And DeVito seems to really fit what they need. You know, just was really smart about distributing the football, involving a lot of guys, you know, getting the ball to playmakers in space, you know, getting Brown involved in the passing game. And so, you know, I think you saw a lot of good news for Illinois on Saturday. And, you know, like, I don't think I even realized until I saw the numbers and then I, like, kind of looked back and said, okay, well, actually, this does check out how good Illinois' pass defense is. Yeah. You know, I mean, they're coming off a year where they were, you know, first in the league in that category, I think, in at least in conference games, if I'm not mistaken, was one of the better, you know, in just in the total conference in pass defense. I think that's what it was. It was four passing touchdowns in conference play.
Yeah.
That's horrific.
I think one over their last six games they played.
Yeah. I mean, so that's tough, man. I mean, and I know they lost a couple guys, but I think they still bring three starters back. I mean, so that's major. And so Indiana has to prove with a new, you know, a new quarterback either way, even if it's Tuttle, you know, like, he's started maybe three games, four games in his career, and, you know, or Bazelak, whoever gets that job, you know, it's a new quarterback. It's, you know, three new wide receivers from who was playing at the end of the year. You know, likely, you know, new running back, you know, new tight end. I mean, AJ Barner was kind of the heir apparent to Peyton Hendershot last year. You know, you kind of knew he was going to be the guy, but still, almost all of their skill position guys are new. And they're going to be facing one of the best pass defenses in the conference, and you know, in one of the better defensive conferences. So can they throw the ball on this team? You know, it's going to be an interesting question. Like, when, and they're going to need to be successful throwing the ball if they're going to beat anybody. So Illinois is going to challenge them right out of the gate. So like there's a high bar, you know, for what they're going to be able to do. And it's going to be really testing them. Are they good enough? Or can they, will they find themselves in a very similar position to one they were in last year? So it's big for Indiana for that reason. I mean, like, again, they have the advantage of having seen this, but that doesn't make it, you know, it helps to know what you're up against. But when you're up against is really, really good, it doesn't make it any worse. You know, like the pass team isn't going to be any easier to deal with. Now that they've seen it on tape. So it's huge for them because they've really got to get started. I mean, you look at their schedule and just, you know, being in the Big Ten East, you know, it is brutal for Indiana.
It's tough because, existence, man.
Yeah, it's just you. There's nothing when, especially with Michigan State coming back. You know, like when they had Michigan State down, that was somebody they could take advantage of. Yep. You know, I mean, Michigan State was bad for a minute. You know, like Michigan, like the team they beat in 2020 was bad. But man, Mel Tucker got it going quick. And so, you know, obviously they lose Kenneth Walker. Kenneth Walker was a big, big deal, but they still got some dudes. I mean, Jaden Reed, a wide receiver, and like just getting that defense right is a big deal. So you got to look at it if you're Indiana and say, well, there's four losses right out of the gate. Like 8-4 is your absolute 100% ceiling. Then you got Cincinnati, you know, who obviously lost a bunch of their, you know, really Cincinnati lost generational players. Yeah. So you have to presume there's going to be a drop off there. But, you know, how bad can they be, man? You know, I mean, like they're preseason top 25. There's still some dudes over there. And so, you know, like that, you're probably going to lose that game. So you're 7-5 almost right out of the gate. So you got to find a way to get six wins out of this one, Western Kentucky, Idaho, Nebraska, you know, Maryland, Rutgers. You know, Maryland's not going to be easy for them. Nebraska's not going to be easy for them. And Purdue sure as heck isn't going to be easy for them. You know, I mean, Purdue, like, you know, Purdue lost some big guys, but Purdue's got a chance. You know, Purdue's going to be a competitive team in the Big Ten West, I think. And so, you know, you can't sit there and hope you get to five thinking that you can get Purdue in the bucket game at the end of the year. Like, you can't. Like, if you're thinking bowl season for this team, you absolutely have to win this game. And, you know, you want to have some kind of proof that everything you did in the off season, not like you all always need this, you know, in the opening game, but like that you got to see progress. You got to believe that, okay, like all of your adjustments mentally, psychologically, every way that you approach the season different made a dent, you know, made an impact. And so like if they lose this game, they're going to have a hard time, you know, keeping that. I mean, you know, if they lose it bad, especially, you know, if they lose it close, that's one thing you can, you know, live and say, okay, well, this play happened and that play happened. We're not that far away. If they get beat up, you know, if they get bulldozed up front and Chase Brown runs for 200 or whatever, they're going to have a hard time getting off the mat. So, you know, it's a big deal for them to. Sorry. Didn't sneeze. Had to. Thought I was going to. But it's going to be an important deal for them to just show that they're a better football team, just show that they're competitive. But winning it is a big deal. I mean,
yeah,
they're behind the eight. Whoever loses this game is behind the eight ball.
Yep.
Either way.
Yep. Huge one for Illinois. If you start 2-0, they haven't won back-to-back games under Brett Bielema, right? And just to get a third of the way through to a bowl game would be huge for this team. So excited to see it. Excited to see Memorial Stadium in Bloomington for the first time in a while here, Dustin. But great insight, man.
It's different than the last time you saw it. It's boxed in now. Yeah.
I know. Like,
both sides are closed up now. So
yeah, can't wait to see it. Dustin, appreciate the insight as always, man. I'll see you on Friday night.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on. Looking forward to see you out here, man.
The baseball season is in full swing, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stample, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll talk waiver wire ads, drops, players to trade for, prospects who could make an impact, and everything in between. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
You ready, Bob?
Well, all right.
Audiences are raving. Bob Marley is electrifying. It's the feel-good movie of the year.
You dig?
Bob Marley, One Love. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
All right, let's bring in Joey Wagner. And look ahead to the Illinois side of things for this huge Big Ten opener. And Joey, let's just start there. Like, Illinois takes advantage of it. We talked about it in our last podcast together. They route a group of five team that I don't think is very good, had a lot of questions, had a lot of newcomers. But now you go into what is a must-win game. Like, maybe it won't be at the end of the year. Maybe they lose this one and could still make a bowl game. But this game feels so important for momentum, for the program, for the season. Am I putting too much on a Friday night game in week one of the real season?
No, I don't think you're putting too much. Like, when you said must win, I was like, all right, Jeremy, let's dial it back a little bit here.
Like, but like, they can lose and still accomplish things, right? But it just feels like, man, you win this one, it sets up for a pretty interesting September.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a hugely important game for all the reasons you mentioned. Like, if you look at the schedule, and I don't feel like we know a ton more about Illinois than we did last week at this time. So if you look at the schedule, you would say, okay, if they're getting there, if they're going to bowl in Brett's second season, you got to win against Indiana. You've got to probably beat – like, these are the games, and it'll be a similar discussion next week. Like, these are the games you've got to do. And I think momentum is a big deal too. Like, that probably is the bigger deal than saying, like, in the grand scheme of the schedule, because we saw last year, like, these things can get flipped on their head. But trying to get home 2-0, give your chance – because let's be honest, dude. If you get home 2-0, give yourself a chance for 3-0, you're basically giving yourself a chance for 4-0, right? Yes. Because you have Chattanooga, and you're going to be projected to win that game regardless of what happens next 2 weeks. So, like, in the big picture, there's a lot on the table.
Yeah, I've seen a team go from 6-0 to 6-6, so nothing's ever guaranteed, Joey. But, like, it's just if you can start 3-1, it sets up things really well for the rest of the season. If you start 4-0... all of a sudden, Joey, you're selling recruits. Something's happening. I think, you know, all those fans who were ticked off, understandably, about the long lines, they'll wait in a long line to watch a 5-0 team go up against, or a 4-0 team go up against Wisconsin, right? Like, they'll be excited for that, or a 4-1 team to go up against Iowa. It's just, it changes the feeling around the program, like you are building on something. Well, like last year, Nebraska felt like something. And then you followed up with a home loss to UTSA and got crushed at Virginia. And then you had to get two ranked wins to kind of feel like, okay, there's progress here. Even though we saw some on the field, it just wins matter. Momentum matters. And I think Illinois is a program that needs this kind of thing to say, hey, look what's going on in Champaign or recruits. Look what Brett Bielema is doing and turn around the program. And you mentioned this to me, and I didn't even think about it. Like, this would be the first time they'd win back-to-back games under Brett Bielema.
Yeah, think about that. Like,
that most giftable face of Joey Wagner, just gift again.
Dang it. Someone's going to get me, aren't they? I mean, it doesn't seem right because it didn't feel like that last year, right? It felt like if you were to just like blindly look back, like, oh, yeah, they certainly did. Well, I thought one of their better chances outside of the early part was when you beat Penn State. And like that Rutgers egg is so like profoundly in the middle of everything. But yeah, man, it's momentum. That's what what this program needs more than anything right now is some sort of moment. Like, yeah. And look, I promise you, if they win on Friday, the Illinois football account, probably Brett Bielema, they're all going to tweet out 2-0 before everybody else is 1-0. I promise you. But guess what? It's a calling card, and you can say that, and you can tell recruits when you call them on Saturday after their game that, hey, look, you know, we're kind of building on this a little bit. Like, momentum has evaded this program for too long. Like, this is such a chance. It's not the only chance, but it is an important chance to build on that.
And the schedule set this up, right? The fact that you didn't have to play Penn State here, you got Indiana instead when they reworked everything. You got to take advantage of this opportunity. And that's what good programs usually do. And we'll see if Illinois can build on it. I do think, Joey, game one worked out to their advantage. We talked about on the pod, did they stay vanilla? Did they hold things back? And you asked the coaches this week about it. Yeah, they did. Like, it's clear the way that game went, they didn't plan on it, but the way that game went to where Wyoming was very vanilla, because I think they had so many newcomers, they were able, Barry Lunny didn't have to unload the playbook. Ryan Walters said, I didn't have to unload the clip. Like, and we saw that. It was very vanilla, wasn't very creative. And what do we know about Ryan Walters? He's very creative, very aggressive. Illinois didn't have to do those things, and they won a football game. So that's why I felt like I didn't learn a ton about Illinois, because I didn't see Barry Lunney and what his offense, I believe it will be. I didn't even see really Ryan Walters' creativity on display. And despite Indiana being able to see that, I think the value of playing a game, getting a game under your belt with all these new pieces, is an advantage going into a game against Indiana, where sure, they have a new offense coordinator. You know, Tom Allen's taking control back of his defense, but they have a lot of new pieces that have to get worked in. And if Illinois feels a little bit more comfortable early in this game, I think it could be really important.
Yeah, and like I asked Ryan about kind of the game playing a little bit vanilla, and he said, I should have probably called him out on it. He said, you know, it works both ways. Sometimes you want to show a lot to make them prepare for a lot. And I thought, I don't know if this is the case for that. Like, I think the least you can show them, the better, and cross that bridge down the road a little bit. But dude, this is a big game for Indiana too. Like, they remade their coordinator. I know you had Dustin on it, you know, before this, and they remade their coaching staff a little bit. They've added new pieces. This is a chance for them to kind of come out and say, "Hey," and I think you and I agree. Like, 2-10 last season is not what Tom Allen coach teams look like. Like, that is such an outlier, I think, for what his Indiana programs are going to look like. But then you get, like, think back to what Illinois looked like last week. There were moments where you're like, oh, that has got to get worked on. You know, there were interior offensive line things like that's got to get worked on. Ryan Walters took the blame for the outside linebackers biting a little hard on some of those options. Let's be honest, you probably got to work on that.
Like, I think that was Ryan being the leader and just taking the bullet there for his guys. That stuff isn't taught. So, I think – but that's the great part of having a game like that. Right.
And the point being, like – if you can get Indiana to trip into a couple penalties that wipe touchdowns away, like you did last week where you tripped into a couple of those, dude, that can be the difference in these games. Like, that's what I think the important part is. I think if you look at the Illinois side, they didn't show enough where you would have all – there is some downside, obviously, to having Indiana has tape, but I don't think it's got, like, all of that it could have been had you opened up against, say, Nebraska again, and you probably did have to steal a turn from Ryan, unload the clip a little bit.
Yeah, and maybe get your kicker out there, miss a few field goals. Okay, the world will still turn after this, and maybe this week he can bounce back a little bit. Just a few injury updates, only two of them, but one big one. Josh McCray will be out this week, and he will be out through the bye week, which is Chattanooga right after that, right? I mean, is he including that? But, yeah, so don't expect him for the next three games. Doesn't sound like a season-ending injury, Brett Bielema said, but it does sound like something that could keep him out for even longer than that bye week. Just the feeling I got, Brett basically was saying, you can correct me if I'm wrong, Joey, but it felt like he was saying he could come back this year, but it depends on how his body responds. That's what I took from it.
Yeah, that's what I took. And then the first kind of milestone in that progression would be the first bye week. So I think that was kind of, hey, don't ask me for a couple weeks, guys. Reach out to me before we go to Madison.
Right. So, I mean, the impact of that, I mean, Reggie Love, I liked what I saw. And not even that. I think I told you after his first run, I said, ooh, that was a little burst there. And Chase Hayden had 40 yards in that game. When you go back and look at the stat sheet, he got involved in the pass game. Just an experienced guy. And we got to remember, Chase Hayden and Reggie Love were both high-ranked prospects. And that's where we talk about, hey, running backs, the kind of depth you want everywhere. And that's why I think it's so important. Then Aiden Loffrey is coming back this week. He should be available and part of the game plan. It's just they're all different than Josh McCray, right? They're not 6'1", 240 pounds, Joey.
Yeah, and I meant to actually ask you this, but I know after rewatching the game, did it feel to you when Chase Hayden came in, like, obviously I think Brett Bielema probably had a clue, like, okay, we might be without Josh for, like, in that moment, I'm sure he had a clue. Did it feel like they kind of force-fed Chase Hayden a little bit when he came in? He got a lot of handoffs. They targeted him a lot in the past. It almost felt like, hey – all right, you're gonna be a guy we're gonna look to. Like, to me, it felt a little force fed for a series. The game was in hand; you could probably afford to do it.
Yeah, I was a little surprised he was the first guy, because I think Reggie Love sounds like he's had a good training camp, but they trust Chase, right? I think he's just he's kind of in the Dre Brown situation where he's almost forgotten, and then all of a sudden, hey, if he's healthy, he can really help you. So he could be an important piece of this team. And I think getting him some reps, getting him a little success was important. I think Reggie Love, who's been bothered by injuries for most of the last calendar year, I think he can be really good. I think he's got a burst. I think he can make people miss, and he's got some size to him as well. But I know people want to just replace Josh McCray and just put Jordan Anderson in there. Brett Bielema was saying earlier this week that the freshman, even though I think he's going to make an impact at some point, Joey, just doesn't sound like he's ready yet.
Yeah, probably not. Now, on the other side of that, like, I'm expecting to see a lot doesn't feel like the right word, but, like, I think we're going to see Aiden Mauferre. Like, he's got the speed that just doesn't really – like, I just think that there's going to be a good couple plays for him to give him a chance and see what he can do. Like, this feels like a pretty big opportunity for him.
Yeah, the other injury update is Sean Miller, the freshman who expected to be a part of this, had an injury. I didn't even see it during the game, so I'm not sure what the injury is, but it does sound like it could hold him out. It's definitely going to hold him out this week. Could hold him out longer than that, so whenever we have an update on that. But the good news is I think you loved what you saw out of Casey Washington, Pat Bryant, and Brian Hightower last week. I think those guys were really good. Hank Beatty can rotate in there. He had a nice catch late in that game. Miles Scott had a catch in that game. So that was nice from that first week. All right, Joe, as we look back on the last week, I was trying to think about what I was most encouraged by, because even though, you know, after the game, I was like, hey, there's some good things here, but I just don't know how much we learned about the team. As I watched the film, obviously running the football like you did, Chase Brown's really good. I think we knew that. Tommy DeVito not forcing things I thought was great to see, because that's going to be important this week. Indiana thrives off turnovers when they're good. They thrive off turnovers, kind of like Lovie Smith. They love to create havoc. But for me, I think it was just how good that secondary was. I know it was Wyoming, but the fact that Quan Martin, Devin Witherspoon, Sidney Brown, I think Taz Nicholson will be tested more this week. Terrell Jennings will be tested more this week. Kendall Smith will be tested more this week. But going up against a team that likes to spread it out, this is a good tackling group. It's a well-coached defensive back group. That's probably what I'm most encouraged about, was Ryan Walters, all of that carrying over in the offseason. That includes the front. I thought Calvin Avery had his best game as an Illini. I thought the fact that maybe you can count on that defense to be a top 50, top half Big Ten defense, that was so encouraging, because we thought that was true. But to see that again, I think you're thinking, oh, this is why Ryan Walters keeps showing up on all these coaching lists.
Yeah, I thought the secondary was really impressive. I also think that, like, last week was not nearly the test that Indiana is going to give. Indiana is going to try to throw this thing around. So you'll probably test depth on that too, right? Like, you're probably going to see more Kendall Smith in there because Quan Martin is probably going to be needed in this. Like, there's going to be different things that are going to have to stand out.
Yeah,
this week.
Can I just build on that? Because Quan Martin was playing free safety most of last week, because they only had three linebackers in there a lot of time. So they had their true 3-4 set with four defensive backs. So Quan is clearly the free safety in those sets, but they're going to have to run a lot of nickel, right? They're going to have to maybe run some dime packages in this game, because Indiana runs a lot, or Walt Bell, from what I've seen at UMass and Maryland, a lot of four wide receiver sets, definitely a lot of three. So that nickel package is going to be in there most of the game.
Yeah, and I'm curious to see how – and again, I don't say curious where it's like, oh, God, can they do it? Because, like, we've seen them play – well in that regard, but it's just another kind of element there. I think the defensive front, I know the pass rush, like, that didn't really happen, and I think you want to see more out of that. I think it was required to see more out of that against Wyoming. But Calvin Avery, man, was really, like, he was really, really impressive against a team he should have been impressive against. But, like, to see him do that, and I thought Brett Bielema's response on Monday was interesting. So it's like, basically, let's see it again. Be consistent. Like, there's no resting on one game for Calvin Avery, and I thought that was a telling response. I also want to say offensively, if you're encouraged by anything, it's the wide receivers.
Yeah.
Dude, for all the whole offseason, we sat here like, oh my, do they have enough? Like, now Brian Hightower kind of coming back into his own, probably reinforced that, added some depth there. But, like, if you would have told me, Jeremy, 6 weeks ago, like, hey, Sean Miller, we don't know what that's going to look like this season, I would have been like, oh, well, who is going to step up? So I just
what? No, I think it's great. I mean, we had Pat Bryan as a breakout candidate, right? Because he kind of needed
I feel really freaking good about
that. Yeah, because he kind of needed to. And you know, I kind of talked all offseason, like, what about Brian Hightower? Like, can we talk about, like, can we say he's going to be part of this rotation? Because it never made sense to me why he wasn't involved last year. And then we find out the injuries did take a toll on him, and he just wasn't 100% correct all year. But it's just like, we saw that talent 2 years ago, and to see that again the other day, my question is, can they get behind somebody? But I will say, Wyoming made sure of that with the way they covered. They were cover three and quarters coverage all day. They didn't want anything to go over the top. So I thought it was great that Tommy DeVito was just like, okay, we'll nickel and dime you, and then I'll take my one shot in this cover two that I read perfectly well and hit Pat Bryan, and it looked good. But we're going to hit these outs. We're going to hit these hitches, and it worked. They moved the chains, and Hightower caught those. Casey Washington had some great contested catches. Pat Bryant did as well. And they didn't even get Isaiah Williams really going because of those injuries. So I am more encouraged about that wide receiver group after what we saw. But now it's like, all right, now take the next step. My concern from the first game, probably the biggest one, was the interior of the offensive line and the miscommunications, but I think that's going to correct itself. Like, I feel like the more reps you get, more Zy Chrisler, Alex Pilstrom will feel comfortable. I thought Isaiah Adams was really good. I thought Julian Pearl looked like a future NFL prospect. I thought Paucho looked healthier than he did all of last year. So I'm not concerned about their long term, but in a game against an Indiana team that's going to have more talented pieces, they added a lot of transfers, I'm interested to see how that goes. And I just think your linebackers have to play better, Joey. You know, I think they'll get more creative, they'll get more aggressive with their blitz packages and all of that, but they just didn't make a big impact. And we saw the Seth Coleman, Ezekiel Holmes things. I would imagine those get cleared up of not, you know, forgetting about the quarterback run and staying home. But even the guys behind them, with as well as Calvin played and as well as Keith played, I thought, in that game, you just didn't see a lot of Calvin Hart. You know, Isaac Darkangelo didn't have a lot of great snaps, and PFF graded him that as well. Like, those are the guys I think need to take a step forward. And great part is you have a week to correct those.
Yeah, I 100% agree. See, you want to see a little bit more out of the linebackers, both inside and outside. I think you still probably feel fine about Calvin Hart, about Tariq Barnes, because, like, there's a body of work there. You want to see Isaac Darkangelo do it in a game a little bit more. Brett Bielema, we just got off of Zoom with him. Quite a fan of him. He remains quite a fan of him, and special teams-wise. Like, I think that's a big deal. But, yeah, you do want to see more of that. I'm with you on the offensive line. I'm very curious, like, how they use Jordan Slaughter moving forward. Like, I thought that was really important for him, and Barry Lunny said as much today, to get in there after that ankle injury. He stabilized it. Brett Bielema said it after the game. You and I watched it. It's like, man, they scored a touchdown on that drive that he was in, and, like, he's not going away. Brett Bielema said he could play tackle to tackle.
Let's think tight on that. If a tackle gets hurt, I would be shocked if Isaiah Adams is not the guy that moves out there, because he can move, man. He's an interesting talent. I think that has a chance at the next level. But to have a Jordan Slaughter,
right?
It hasn't been many years where they've had that guy. Like, last year, it ended up being Jack Bedovenak, was so important to stabilizing what was an otherwise a pretty good offensive line, right? That could be Jordan Slaughter this year. That if Chrisler struggles or say Pilstrom struggles, like, maybe you got a guy you can bring in and play there.
Yeah, I think sometimes you and I, like, you get caught up with, no, not in the five. Don't think about it. Like, he's a guy to continue to think about. Another point of encouragement, I guess. I don't even care about the production. They did something in kick and punt other than wave to everybody who was still waiting in line to get their water at Memorial Stadium for a fair catch. That was so different than we saw last year. Peyton Vining, obviously, with the big return to open it up, but, like, that was notable to me, Jeremy.
I mean, during the game, I was thinking, man, there's not many vertical shots, right?
Yes,
in the offense. I thought that, but as you watch the game, it was working. What they were doing was working. There was no reason to force things just to entertain us, like, make us a bicycle clown. Like, we didn't need that. Like, Illinois didn't have to do that. So I understand some of the questions this week, but Indiana is not going to play quarters defense. Indiana is going to get aggressive, and they're going to run some man. And that's when I'm going to be interested, Joey, to see, okay, is this an issue? Can these wide receivers get separation, right? Can they
force the ball down the field vertically, and can they get the tight ends involved in the middle of the field and the seam packages, and then can Pat Bryant get separation or go up and win a contested ball? I think this week will let us know if that's an issue with this team or not. I do think talent-wise, they need somebody who can stretch the field other than maybe Isaiah Williams, but I think this week will be a much better barometer of that than last week when they just didn't have to do it.
Why are you yelling at me?
I'm not yelling at you.
No, you didn't.
Maybe I'm yelling at – I don't know.
No. Make me a bicycle clown, yes. And then Vince Vaughn comes back.
Yes.
Man, yes. That's Mitch. Cut that out. But yeah, I agree. I think you're going to have to see them stretch it out a little bit more. But, dude, Indiana's going to play – like you've said it, Indiana's going to play aggressively. Like, that is not what we saw from Wyoming at all. So it's just – it's different. Like, there's not, other than like game reps, how much can you really carry over stylistically from what you had to do? I say had to do, but like what you did to leave with the win, which you kind of just got to, hey, this is how you're going to play. So you've got the talent to take advantage of it, and we'll see you out of here.
And the fun part is, stylistically, these two teams couldn't be more different when it comes to Wyoming and Indiana. Wyoming's this running team at the Group of Five level, didn't show much. They're pretty vanilla offensively and defensively, but they want to run the football. Like, Maryland does it in a completely different way. Like, Wyoming was more Illinois-like in that they run multiple tight ends and they're just kind of power run. And then Indiana's spread it out. Walt Bell loves to run. He doesn't really have a running quarterback, which I'm really interested to see how that goes, because he usually has a running quarterback. But they're going to throw it, and they're going to spread you out horizontally and all of that. And then defensively, you're right. I just think they get really, really aggressive. So going into this matchup, I think the best thing for Illinois, the biggest advantage other than just having a game under their belt, Joey, is I think they have the advantage in the trenches. Indiana did add a bunch of transfers to their defensive front. I think that takes time to kind of gel together. And those guys didn't have a lot of success. They have nobody on their team, Joey, that returned from last year that had more than one sack. So, like, the defensive line is a huge question mark for them. Illinois' offensive line, I think, is at least solid, right, in the Big Ten. And I thought the Indiana offensive line, they didn't add any transfers. They were bad last year. They do have a lot of experience, but they weren't very good last year. And I think Illinois, at least their starters, are pretty good. Like, Johnny Newton, Keith Randolph, and Calvin Avery are pretty good. And if Seth Coleman and Ezekiel Holmes can be better, I think Illinois got the advantage in the trenches.
Yeah, I don't expect Tommy DeVito to get out of there clean again. It's probably just – that's not going to happen. If so, he really does need to get those guys, I mean, minimally, like a cheeseburger or something. I don't
– some of the NIL money, man.
But, yeah, it's – I mean, I think we're going to say that moving forward – as Brett Bielema being the head coach, like, Illinois has an advantage in the trenches. Probably as we look at how recruiting's gone, it's probably fair to say right now, offensively, that advantage, you still want to see them maybe get some more of those defensive line guys in the trenches. Like, that's just kind of what he does. And they're going to power you. They're going to have that advantage. The other part of it, we talked about pressure. That's not all. I mean, a lot of it's on the outside linebackers, right? To get after the quarterback. But Johnny Newton kind of talked after the game when we asked him about third down. He's like, I thought maybe they'd pass a little bit. And, you know, you could tell he was kind of ready to, like, I would like to go get the quarterback, please. And he can do it. So, like, I think that'll be an interesting factor as well.
Yeah, I think the thing we got to put in the context of not having many disruptions or pressures or sacks is Wyoming threw the ball 20 times. How many of those were dropbacks? Like, a lot of them just not many opportunities to do that. So sometimes we get caught in the stats a little bit too much. I was more concerned about containing the quarterback than rushing the quarterback after that game. The one thing I think Illinois has to do well, and the one thing I think you feel good about, given last year, given what we saw last week, you have to tackle well against a spread offense. They're going to spread you out, and you're going to have to tackle in space. Devin Witherspoon's a fantastic tackler. We know Sidney Brown can be. Sometimes he can miss tackles, though, and get over-aggressive.
PFF does not let him forget it if he does. Goodness gracious.
They hate Sidney Brown and his missed tackles. But Quan Martin is a really, really good tackler. So if the other cornerback spot, the linebackers, like they're going to have to flow. The linebackers are going to be really key in this one, so that'll be interesting to watch. But that's a concern. If you don't tackle well, you know, an offense like this can really make you pay.
Speaking of the other cornerback spot, I'm fascinated. I wish I would have thought before this exact moment to follow. Brett Bielema said they took Taz Nicholson out at halftime because of a soft tissue deal. We don't know if that was like a kind of a lingering thing and they didn't want to overdo it, or if that was something. But like, if you the Terrell Jennings excitement is also something that's there. Like that's just an interesting spot to me still. After week one is what that looks like.
Tyler Strain breaking on that ball, man. Like, that was – going back and watching that, I feel like that was speed. That kid can run. Like, that's one thing we knew. He was a little undersized, but he can run. So, maybe he gets in dime packages, or maybe he gets some reps at corner at some point. That could be real important. Other concern? I think it's going to be a close game, Joey, so special teams. Right? You had two muff punts. Didn't lose them. I know Cody Case and Isaiah Williams will be back, but then Caleb Griffin missing a couple field goals. 51-yarder, whatever. But when you get inside the 45, you got to be able to count on your kicker making most of those. So in a close game, I think it's going to be really important.
Yeah, the concern, and I don't know how much concern long-term to have with Caleb Griffin. That was, you would have liked to see him convert that one inside 50. But if he doesn't, like if it just can't find it, it's tough stuff behind him, man. Like, you if you're Illinois, you really need him to find it and kind of be that consistent force there, because David Alano doesn't arrive for about 4 months here.
There's a reason they had a competition. There's a reason they're adding Alano as a scholarship guy next year, even though Caleb could come back. Like, they think they got to get better there. So those are some lingering concerns. I've never been to a game, cover a football game in Bloomington, Joey. This is going to be interesting. It's a place that's not a scary place, but they've been having a better attendance in Illinois recently, despite last year. They've had some good years under Tom Allen. So it's not the road environment of Minnesota. It's not the road environment of Penn State, certainly. But it's important for Illinois to go get a road win here.
Yeah, and it's an opener. Like, there's – dude, excitement exists, man. Like, there's going to be excitement. You know, hey, they got a new coaching staff, the whole new assistant coaches and coordinators. Yeah. Hey, that's going to get some excitement. I'm personally thrilled, Jeremy, that it's an 8 o'clock Eastern time kickoff. So you and I, after the game, will have none of the opportunity to enjoy Bloomington's finest establishments. That's a blast. I'll get a six-pack to take back to the hotel room for our post-game pod. But, yeah, man, like, that's – it's a different environment. I don't care about the day earlier like that. I think Brett Bielema's planned for that long enough to not think that's a huge issue.
Yeah, because it's what, 16 hours earlier than a normal kickoff? Like, yeah, it's some time, but these guys are professionals. They'll get it. Like, the NFL, it's like a 4-day turnaround for some teams when you go from Sunday to Thursday. I think they'll be all right. Well, Joey Wagner, appreciate it, man. Maybe we will on Friday night / Saturday morning from Bloomington, Indiana. Maybe we'll have some beers while we're doing the post-game podcast.
And do the YouTube live and have the six people who are still awake.
Why
after
not?
That. Or maybe we'll get like the YouTube live
after,
like,
dark.
After dark, and it won't be us who have had a few drinks. It'll be people coming in. God forbid they're upset. That'll be a lot.
Should we just have an open Zoom? Like, have everybody come in?
Oh, good Lord. Oh, my God.
Give their opinions on Illinois football.
I'd love to hear it.
All right, everybody, have a great day. Have safe travels if you're going over to Bloomington, Indiana, and enjoy the game. We'll talk to you afterwards right here on the Illini Inquirer podcast. So give us a follow, rating, review wherever you get your podcast. Check us out on YouTube. Smash the like button. Subscribe to us as well. We appreciate all your support. Everybody, take care of each other. Have a great day. We'll talk to you next time on the Illini Inquirer podcast.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.